Was there any sort of tight party organization, or was it a very loose?
It was more or less Mr. Bandaranaik, Sakir. And people flocked to him. And very often he also we felt that he is also trying to get power.
Well, what was the policy they put forward at that stage? I mean, what were the main planks?
Well, the usual thing, Sinhalese culture, village, improving the villages.
Did you feel that it had any appeal then?
Yes, it had an appeal.
But did it go beyond the middle classes to the masses? Did it have, shall I say, rural support, the support of the village headman and those people?
Well, some influential people in the villages supported him, but I don't think it went to the masses.
And what was the relationship between him and RSS Gunawardena? Were they closely allied?
There were changes now and then. RSS, when he felt he could be a minister, he was with Mr. Bandaranaik. And Mr. Bandaranaik supported him against Siripala Samarakkodi for some minister's job. And then again, RSS, when he found he could get some ministerial job or something under DSA Nanayaka, he joined them. Oh, our whole trouble is that these people jump from one party to another for the sake of their own personal benefit.
In fact, if I can switch the subject to the election, 36, when you contested Colombo South, who did you have to
Dr. Kure.
I'm very interested in the mode of campaigning then. How did you campaign for votes?
Well, I had some supporters, perhaps some of them, who were dissatisfied with Dr. Kure. And gradually, the more the Dr. Kure's party happened to be the rich party, the more they despised us, the more the masses supported me.
Now, for instance, you had no party organization. No. How did you organize your campaign? I mean, the finances, your support, your canvassing?
Well, I had no money. But I went from house to house. There were a few people in different areas who were ready to help, and they joined. The result is Dr. Kure thought, actually they openly said that he is a man fallen from the skies, nobody knows him. How can I get a vote? But they forgot the fact that I had taught in most of this Ananda College, Wesley College, Royal College for a long time, and those young men were grown-up people when I came back. They knew me. Without making a fuss, they gave me a very good, sound support.
That is, they also went round and canvassed?
Yes, that they did, without show. Suppose an old boy at Royal College.
Yeah.
Now, Jaya was an old boy. Stanley Soisa was an old boy. Most of these, old boys of a certain classes and types, that Siripala Samarakkodi. They did their canvassing and everything, they helped. Privately, they didn't come into meetings and shout or anything. But gradually, my meetings began to be well attended because the masses took it up.
Oh, and you had a fair number of meetings too, public meetings?
Oh, yes, a very large number of meetings.
And when you spoke at these public meetings, if I may ask, what was the line you put forward?
Well, the line I put was this, that here's a country neglected.
Mm-hmm.
The poor, the conditions, the houses, the question of houses in town and other parts, the education,
mm-hmm.
neglected, practically denied to a very large number of people, because there are the Sinhalese schools. Apart from the English school, these people had no, their education is limited to becoming a Sinhalese school teacher. Sinhalese school teacher.
So you took up the cause of the underprivileged?
That's right.
Did you also attack British imperialism?
There was no cause for me to attack imperialism at that time,
mm-hmm.
except where they had neglected the people.
Mm-hmm. And now when you, I never participated in a campaign even now,
mm-hmm.
but when you go house to house canvassing, I presume there is a little bit of embarrassment. How did you, how does one ask for votes? Do you say that I stand for this? Would you consider voting for me? Or?
No, we had issued manifestos.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when we go to a house, more than our putting up the point of view or policy, the people ask us.
To do this and do that?
Yes, what will you do or why? Certain questions are pertinent and impertinent. But I was never upset by them. If a person has decided to vote for Dr. Khufi, I was not displeased at it. I say, all right, you know him. Well, I asked her, can I speak to your servants? Oh, yes, he said, Dr. Dili. Then somehow or other, in a house, there's the master and the mistress of the house who are rich and voting with Dr. Guru, whereas the other seven or eight servants were with me.
Were there any cases where they refused to permission to speak to the servants?
No. Well, if they did, there were others, my workers, the servants themselves spread the idea. So and so came. When Dr. Kure comes, he doesn't speak to the servants, he speaks to the master of the house. Oh, you can get these people to work for me. And he goes. The servants here, and they, very often, some of the people, the crude type, took money from Dr. Kure to put up flags and put my flags.
That's very interesting. If I sort of may branch out and speak of elections in the rural areas, what factors do you think were crucial in the rural areas? Say your friends and others you knew who got into the state council?
No, I couldn't quite follow.
Now, for instance, would the influence of a headman be very crucial?
Well, it depends. Headman has his following. And if the headman happens to be a man with few influential people like his own followers, crushing the people or doing sort of acts of injustice, these people harbored them and openly they say, yes, we'll vote with the, as the headman instructs them. But they actually voted against him.
Mm-hmm.
They felt that's an opportunity to take revenge from the headman or an influential person, maybe a mudalali or a bad type of employer.
Mm-hmm.
They felt, oh, that's an opportunity to take revenge from him and voted against the candidate who was supported.
Is it correct to say that in those days, people quite openly use the caste issue?
No, I don't think they openly
mm-hmm.
did it.
But was it used whenever they could?
It must have been used because it actually comes like that. Now a person of a certain caste, influential man, he goes and speaks to somebody else who is influential and happen to be of the same caste. Then they get together and plan without much of approval or disapproval from the candidate. Candidate naturally likes to get any support he can.
Now, regarding the headman, isn't it correct to say that they could influence the registration of voters because they had to do the registration and therefore they might favor A rather than B by excluding B's supporters?
That there may have been opportunities, but it was not done on a very large scale because the headmen were misled in a way, thinking that the people were with them. They can always get the poorer people to support them. They had that idea. Therefore, I don't know, they did not at the start exclude people purposely, but there were cases where people were included as voters who did not reside in Colombo. Now, in Colombo, say, house, two or three people live. But there are, you find, 10 or 12 or 15 even more people registered as residents in that house with the object of voting for a certain person.
So they did that? You had to check on that, did you?
It's so difficult to check on that. Now when they come for registration, cards, some papers are given, asking them to fill in the names of those who are residing there. They give a whole list of people who come from outside, who are not in that electorate. And then there's nobody to those days to check it.
Now, for instance, each candidate was supposed to, these are published, so that you could check and...
Yeah, you could check, but very few candidates went individually to different houses to ask how many there were in the house and whether they actually live there or they were bogus voters.
So, when you went canvassing, couldn't you sort of take general
notes? No, that did not happen very much in Colombo South.
Oh,
because this was more intelligent and different area.
Mm-hmm.
But that happened in Colombo Central, where people names were inserted purposely to get with the idea of getting their vote.
Yes, and they brought others in then?
Yes.
Was Colombo South in those days a suburban area?
No, it's not.
Was it like, say, Panadura today?
No, it started from Colombo Fort and went as far as Ratmalana.
Oh, I see. But then Ratmalana in those days would have been rather rural.
Rural.
Mm-hmm.
Part of Ratmalana.
So
and then on the other side, Dehivalad Tidya, Kalubovila, all those areas came into.
So did you have to do a lot of walking?
Oh, yes. That was a joke for my opponents. They thought that I walk so much that I wear off my shoes and can never get in.
Did you have a car or anything at your disposal to some extent?
Yes, at one stage I had a car. Some friend helped me with a car, I think.
Don't you think that where it included so many underprivileged people, sometimes it was an advantage not to have your own car?
Yes, I can think so.
Now, I believe you were in England between 1920 and
1933. No, 35, I think.
Oh, I see. But before you went to 1920, for how long were you teaching?
All my time was employed in teaching. I went from Royal College. Before I joined Royal College, I was at Ananda. And then before at Ananda, I was at Dharmaraja teaching. And then all throughout, before I left Ceylon, I was a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Were you interested in political matters at that stage?
Not political matters, but I was interested in law. I want to study law.
You didn't join the Buddhist Temperance Societies?
No.
National Congress?
No.
Kumari tells me that you knew Mr. E.T. De Silva quite well.
Oh, yes, yes.
You see, he's been rather neglected political leader, and I would like a pen picture of him.
Well, I knew him after I came from England.
Oh,
came back. Earlier, I had a sort of an admiration for his views. He had progressive views. He had come from England. He and C.H.S. and Fernandez, all of them were more progressive types. So we were admirers of those people before I went to England, and I knew he took an active part in Congress matters. But I didn't know him very well intimately then. But it was after coming back from England that I knew. No.
Was he a state councillor too?
No, he was not.
What sort of man was he? You said progressive. Progressive in what sense?
Well, he is not far different from the type of D.B. He is not a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
He has been in England. He knew what life politics in those countries are. And he wanted his countrymen to go on those same lines.
Would you say that he was more radical than Bandaranaike?
Well, that I can't actually say, because Bandaranaike got in. Originally, they may have sort of similar views, but when Mr. Bandaranaike came, he came as a man who wants to put work for the people.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that E.T. De Silva dropped out of politics in the 30s?
It may be the attitude of the other leaders, other politicians. Now that often happens. However sincere a man be, if some others form into a clique, you naturally drop out of them and you feel you can't do anything with them. E.W. Pera was one of them.
What sort of man was E.W.?
He is a very sincere, honest man. It's very rarely you come across a man of that type. He had no prejudices. Yet, he was independent in his views. The result is that those people had to reject him.
Isn't it correct to say that in the 30s, D.S. was more communal-minded than people realized in the 30s as against his later days?
He may have been.
Mm-hmm. And just going back again to your earlier period, the 1910s, and now people have built Dharmapala up. But I was wondering how much influence and how much impact he had on A, the middle class, and B, the masses in your time.
Well, he went from village to village, where there's a temple available, he got a meeting. I remember as a, even during my school days, attending one of his meetings at one of our temples.
Big crowd?
Yes, big crowds come, because the manner of his speaking is attractive to the people. He seems to be sort of openly attacking these people for not working hard, and he was a temperance man. He had detected the failings and the reasons why the Sinhalese were degenerating.
And he was militant.
That was one thing which appealed to the most people.
In that sense, wouldn't it be correct to say that through the Buddhist temperance movement, there was some mass political awakening?
Oh, yes, yes. The temperance movement actually was a beginning of a political movement in Ceylon.
And he would have been fairly well known to the villagers in Sinhalese areas, then?
Oh, yes. He had a newspaper. He used to write that Janata Pari today, what should be known.
Mm-hmm.
And in those he attacks, and when he comes to a meeting, he comes in his national dress. If he sees his brother, Dr. Evavitar, in the open meeting he abuses him, look at him. He comes with these shoes or these trousers of the white man. He is not ashamed, he said that. So this tickles the master to listen to him.